But we begin today, again, with education, with the outgoing superintendent of IPS. Last night, the IPS school board tearfully, there was a lot of tears from the IPS school board as they voted to cut 100-plus staff members, some teachers, some support staff, some administrators, to try to deal with a $30 million budget. The interim superintendent is Dr. Peggy Hinckley. She's on our live line. Superintendent, how you doing?
I'm well, sir. How are you?
I'm fine. I was sitting at home watching it online on the IPS's website, and it is fair to say that the final vote was emotional. Did you feel that?
Absolutely. I think there was a very spirited debate during the discussion portion about the cuts. And even though we've known about the cuts for most of them for the last two or three months, I think it was very clear that everyone realizes that while these may be necessary decisions, these recommendations have names and faces and people with families and children and spouses and homes, and it never can be. If it was ever an easy decision, then I think we would be a bad organization. And so I think we found last night commissioners relaying personal stories. Some of them, of course, have had spouses who've lost jobs. Mm-hmm. One was a teacher who was riffed. So I think it was important to have that emotional discussion. So people realize that, you know, they've really been torn, not easy to deal with budget issues, but obviously when you're trying to get the budget in the right direction, you have to make cuts.
One of the things that in listening to the debate last night, Sam Odell wanted to hold the vote off for a couple of more days, citing a couple of things. One, he felt that there had been there had been some changes in the list of staffing, and that the list seemed to be a movable target. And then another thing that I don't think other board members picked up on, I picked up on it, was that he wanted to know where the diversity of the workforce would be after these cuts. And in answering some of the questions on the board, Superintendent, you indicated that some of these individuals that were on the list have found employment in other areas in IPS. That obviously affects the level of diversity. So when will we know what the diversity is of the IPS workforce moving forward, and whether because there are people in my community that strongly believe that these cuts have reduced the level of African Americans in the overall employment workforce in the Indianapolis public schools?
Well, first of all, I think that Commissioner Odell has asked for, and I recognize this is, you know, his first experience as an elected public official with a very difficult decision, and so certainly he was asking for a lot of information. He is not; his requests have been to identify the race and ethnicity of those that were losing their jobs. Mm-hmm. What makes this a moving target, which I think one of the other commissioners, Commissioner Hannon, tried to explain last night, I've certainly been given the charge to try and reduce as many positions as is necessary. So upon my arrival March 5th, I put a freeze on every vacancy so that I have to review whether we fill it. So one of the reasons there were more changes is it's June, and we've got people that have retired or they've left for other positions, and then we may have moved people into those positions who were formerly in other positions in the district office. So, you know, it makes sense that now they may be receiving less pay to do that, but obviously some job is better than no job. So I think those movements will occur all summer because it is that's the natural time when people move on. I think it's important to know that as we looked at those folks that were being disproportionately affected, I talked with, particularly secondary principals, since most of them were affected there, that they needed to, these people were performing a great service to the district and working with our young men and women. And if they were valuable to their organization, they might have other openings or other people perhaps who are less effective that they needed to evaluate out of the system and place these individuals. And some principals have done that, but not quite as many as I hoped would. But that may change over the summer with positions being vacated and other people moving on. But we have provided to all commissioners a list of every person whose job has been eliminated. We have given race, ethnicity, gender, salary, and benefit information because that was the way it had been framed along the way that he wanted that information.
At what point, though, at what point does the calendar give us a fixed date where we can look at the diversity of the IPS workforce for the school year 2013-2014 to look forward? Is that when school starts on or about the 8th of October? Is that by September 1st? When can we get a snapshot of what the workforce is after all of this stuff settles down?
Well, I think that's a fair question, certainly. I think we'll have a better picture of that once school starts because we'll have it as not, obviously in the summer, not uncommon to have people leave and resign, retire. Mm-hmm. So there are going to continue to be changes. I think there'll be several snapshots along the road because first, I think there'll be a clear snapshot when school starts. But I think the other piece is last night was not the last budget cut. We are finishing some preliminary operation reviews of the district functions that will now move to the Indianapolis Chamber of Commerce to do more in-depth reviews that will likely result in further reductions. And I would anticipate those occurring in the late summer, early fall with more recommendations to come. And that as you and I have talked when I've been on your program before, if you think of Fort Wayne Community Schools, they surpassed us this year in enrollment. They have 52 school buildings. We have 64. So undoubtedly, we will have to face building closures, which will also affect the workforce in terms of consolidation and potential loss of positions. I think in your question, the best time to know with all these moves over the summer, ins and outs, it will be probably in August that we'll have a picture.
But see, now you've raised a point. The board and you have asked the Chamber of Commerce to come in, particularly in central office, and look for efficiencies, try to figure out, you know, where the fat is, where's the non-important muscle that can be cut. So let's just say for the sake of the argument, there is a unit that these people from the Chamber of Commerce go in and say, hey, IPS, this is a unit that you guys really don't need. And let's just say for the sake of the argument, the majority of employees in that unit is African-American. So now we're up to another situation. You know, shouldn't we at least, A, know what the workforce is now before this chamber study? And B, doesn't there need to really be a policy that looks at potential cuts and also looks at what is the impact on reducing diversity? Because it seems incongruous that IPS would reduce the diversity in its workforce representing a district where the diversity of the total population living in the district is increasing, not decreasing.
Well, I think what you have to look at is when you're looking at the operations functions of IT and human capital and operations and finance, those are skill sets that obviously people have to be able to do certain jobs with certain skill sets. And so diversity is certainly important. But if you obviously have people that don't have certain skill sets, they're not going to be successful in positions they're placed in. But I think certainly we're trying to look at all those issues, but it really comes down, just as it does with teaching staff, it's based on licensing and certification, and with support staff and other staff, it has to come down to you know, what the skill sets are for people. But I think the important thing to note is we have to move this needle of the financial health of the district. We have made about $10 million in cuts. We have 20 more to go. Further, we are going to lose money in state support every year because of the what we call the amount per pupil we get on the count day is going to decrease from about $7,100 that we now get. It will eventually go to $4,600. So we will lose additionally $5 to $10 million a year. And if we lose enrollment of students, then, in fact, we lose further money. So I think that it's a difficult challenge to place how do we maintain that diversity when we're going to have less people because there's no way we can continue to support this organization at the level we're currently with employees. So it's going to be a difficult struggle, but I think there has been great criticism from the business community about the bloated bureaucracy of IPS, and I think the only way to give an objective third-party review is to have business people come in and look at what we're doing and make those recommendations. Obviously, the Board of or the commissioners, there are only recommendations. The commissioners can either embrace those or they can reject them.
We're talking with the interim superintendent of IPS, Dr. Peggy Hinckley. On the chambers, the chamber also being asked is there are chamber members that have strong records of diversity. Is the chamber going to be asked to analyze what the diversity programs are of IPS?
Well, we haven't asked that question, but certainly...
Shouldn't it be?
That's a question. I think right now that they aren't involved yet. We've had other business people that have just taken big picture views and are in the process of making some recommendations. But certainly, I think it would be very appropriate to add that question to the mix as they look at these efficiencies that we hope to gain.
And are you asking the chamber, is that task force going to reflect the diversity of the district?
Well, Mr. Brown, I've only had one preliminary conversation with them, and it's just was about whether they were interested in helping us.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are currently meeting with their members, and we will certainly add that question to the agenda.
Let me go back on the finances. I've heard from members of the legislature from Marion County and have gotten some communication from the Legislative Services Organization, Legislative Services Agency, which is the nonpartisan staff members that draft legislation for both sides of the island, our Indiana General Assembly. And LSA strongly disagrees with IPS's interpretation that the per pupil funding formula for any school district in Indiana is going to drop to $4,600. Is that really a realistic dollar amount when the people that write the legislation, the inside the little beehive down there saying that number's not real?
Well, Deborah Heinlein, who's our chief financial officer, has a draft of a document that came out of Legislative Services that would point to a contrary point of view with regard to that. I mean, I've seen the numbers are sitting on my desk now. I have this first time I've heard someone say that isn't true, but it comes through, I believe, the complexity index. But mm-hmm. I would certainly defer to Mrs. Heinlein because she has a more thorough understanding. But we've been talking about this for several months, and I certainly haven't heard anyone correct us until your comment.
Well, State Representative Cherish Pryor at the meeting the other week raised the issue, and I would think that somebody that sits on the Ways and Means Committee that actually writes the budget for our state, we would have some knowledge on that. And speaking of that, the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus had asked for some basic diversity information from IPS. Given will the diversity data for this school year, the school year that is just ending, when will that be provided to the caucus?
The caucus requested in their letter the 59 positions that you have referenced, and that information was sent to them. And so I've not had an additional request, but as we have indicated in the past, as we are making these reductions, we will continue to post information on the website with regard to the race, ethnicity, gender, and salary and benefits of positions that are being lost. And then once that settles, if you will, in the as the start of the new school year, because we'll have many ins and outs, mm-hmm. we can then create a picture of what that diversity looks like for the 13-14 school year.
One of the other things that you brought up in your report last night at the board meeting that the Indianapolis Star did not mention, none of the television stations mentioned, was something called a school autonomy agreement. And you showed a draft of such a school autonomy agreement to the members of the board. I don't know whether the board, that was just a briefing last night, or whether the board took action. What is a school autonomy agreement?
The board did not take action. It was simply a draft of a document, and it is still, in progress. One of the things that all seven commissioners had spoken to me about upon my arrival was they wanted more autonomy for schools. And so I'm kind of looking at this in two parts. And, of course, the new superintendent will really be the person that has to monitor this. There are occasionally schools, and probably the most notorious one is the Arlington Woods example, School 99, mm-hmm. that was using Project Restore, and then there was some clash with the district office over what they were doing and whether they'd be allowed to continue, but they obviously had better results with the program. So there's immediately a concern about the only autonomy that a school would have if they applied for this, and this is, of course, I shared the idea based on what commissioners had talked with me about. This has not been approved by the commissioners yet, mm-hmm. and it will need further discussion. But the idea being that if I want to design an instructional program that I think would be better than what the district is requiring me to do, that I could ask the commissioners for autonomy in my instructional program only. So the district would maintain all of the operational functions. Principals don't want to get their own custodians and hire the bus drivers. They want to have control of their program. They would still have to obviously do all the state and federal laws and all those things that we're required to do. But if, for example, they wanted to focus that in a different direction to improve their results, the commissioners could grant them that autonomy for their instructional program for a period of years. And they would have to meet certain benchmarks to continue that autonomy. I think ultimately where this can go is that where we have had persistently low-performing schools, the commissioners could change that timeline to be, let's say, in September or October for people to apply for the next school year. And there might be people interested in providing different instructional programs to schools, that particularly those that have been persistently failing. The autonomy, what I've heard from many people in the community, is that there are many organizations that want to give money to an individual school to further their instructional program. They do not want to give the money to IPS as an entity for fear that it will get lost in the general budget. So if schools have autonomy, they would then have the ability to apply for other grants and monies from other organizations. But it's really focused on improving their student achievement results.
How then, though, do we ensure that there's diversity of staff? In other words, if a school principal, as I'm reading this document, would have the authority to determine staffing, including the hiring, discipline, and termination of staff done in accordance with applicable state and federal law and collective bargaining agreements, where is their adherence to a policy of diversity in the workforce in IPS? That's not covered in collective bargaining. That's not necessarily covered in state and federal law. That has to be a policy of the district.
Well, it does, but I think that you also have to realize, and I learned this from the universities, the pool of available candidates that are diverse, particularly in the teaching force, young people have many choices today versus when I was a young person and pretty much my options were being a teacher, a nurse, or a secretary. Today, young people have more choices than probably they know what to do with. So many young people are choosing other careers besides teaching. So all the districts are competing for a smaller pool of diverse candidates. I would hope that one of the things, though, I think that all of our school leaders realize and recognize is they're all working hard to attract diverse candidates because of the fact that children have to see people that look like them before they believe that those opportunities are open to them. But, you know, you obviously look at the candidate pools to see who's available and make your best choices based on that.
As I'm looking at this school autonomy agreement, and what is the timeline on a vote? Is this something that would not be voted on by the board until the fall?
Well, it couldn't wait that long. If they, you know, this came really from the commissioners wanting me to do something to allow schools to be more autonomous. If we were going to do that, it would be something that would have to occur in the next month, simply because otherwise schools wouldn't be ready to do anything in 13-14.
And is there any, let's just say,
whether they want to pursue that or not, I don't know.
Let's just say, for the sake of the argument, that Arlington Woods signed this agreement and they are an autonomous school. Mm-hmm. Is there anything keeping themselves from calling themselves a charter?
Well, a charter is a whole different governing organization, and IPS would not be providing the facility and the operations and the IT support. This is not an application for a charter at all.
But the last time I checked, the term charter school is not a registered trademark of anybody. I mean, we have a charter school law, but that doesn't mean that you could not have School 99, using them as an example because it's a great school, the Arlington Woods IPS charter. What stops that? I know it's branding. It's a branding thing.
The agreement is clear. This is not a charter. It has nothing to do with charters. Charters are, managed by other outside entities. There's no intent to do that.
But wait a minute.
Leaders to be able to have more autonomy from the district office and making decisions about what curriculum they'll use. It's really focused on how they can improve their results. And so this was an attempt to satisfy that question for them. I don't think anyone's intent is that this would be a large number of schools. I think it's something that would just give a couple of those schools that have those unique programs to give them an opportunity to try those without a lot of interference from the district office.
I understand that, but
it is not a charter.
But I understand that. But the law says the Indianapolis Public Schools can charter schools. I'm looking at a school autonomy agreement that gives the principal of this school the authority to do certain things, and then a company called the Indianapolis Public Schools is providing other things. Looks like a charter to me. Sounds like a charter. And I don't think the charter school law requires IPS to go out and stand on the street corner and hire somebody. This looks like something that could at least solve a marketing and a branding issue. The board seems to want to give schools more autonomy. I don't have, intellectually I can understand that. The community is saying they like the word charter. Something about charter. It's sort of like, fancy hamburgers or something. So, and IPS is falling behind in competing with offering charters. It seems to me this is the one, A. And B, this is the first time there has been any public discussion in the media within the IPS district on school autonomy. Shouldn't, and I know that's not necessarily your responsibility, shouldn't the board be out here talking about this if this could come to a vote in 4 to 5 weeks?
Well, in fairness, they just, while they have talked about it, obviously I had other things they had given to me as immediate priorities to work with. What I was trying to do is to capture their ideas and thoughts, but they saw it last Friday for the first time. And I haven't established a timeline with them. All that I've said to them is if they want to begin with a few schools that would be able to be autonomous and with their programs, and then they would be allowed to, it would allow them to attract other resources to expand their programs They would have to, you know, obviously we're getting ready to round the corner to July. They can't be ready for this school year if they apply 2 weeks before school starts. But, you know, this is obviously something the commissioners will have to decide whether they want to pursue it for this year or whether they want to look at this with the new superintendent and decide something different. But while, you know, what you say about the trademark of the word charter, most of us think of that being an outside entity separate from a public school corporation, even though they can charter their own schools. That is not the intent of the conversation that I've had with the commissioners. They're just looking for school options and more choices, but they would still be under the umbrella of the Indianapolis Public Schools.
The last two school years, during the last two summers, there have been employees of IPS that have literally gone door to door trying to get students that perhaps dropped out or moved or went to charters or what have you to come back home to IPS to re-enroll. There is some anecdotal evidence that mitigated enrollment decline that could have been worse. You don't have that effort this year because a number of those individuals are individuals that, as of last night's vote, are no longer employed by IPS. Are you all concerned that there is no effort being made this summer to be aggressive out in the community to try to re-enroll students in IPS while these 8 million charters are all knocking on doors, putting up balloons, and goodness knows what else?
Well, our internal data would indicate that reclamation was not necessarily as successful as you may have heard, mm-hmm. Given the cost of it. And so what we have done is we have intensified our marketing efforts with students. We are, as you know, under the new transfer tuition law, we were able to ensure that while many of the districts around us are going to close their boundaries now that there are new rules, IPS will be allowed to continue to enroll students who are not in the IPS district into the magnets because of the rules that apply to the magnets apply to our children as well as to other children that may come to IPS. And, for example, I just approved upping the caps at Christus Attucks Medical Magnet because we had 80-plus children on a waiting list. So it's too early to know how those opportunities are going to prosper. But certainly John Alfart and working with school principals, we're working hard to continue to market IPS in a different way to families throughout Marion County.
It's fair to say, on the assumption that there's three individuals coming into town being interviewed, one's being interviewed today, one tomorrow. Everybody gets to meet them tomorrow from 6 to 8 at the Ed Center, talking about the finalists. Assuming that the board finds someone, and makes an offer, the new rules, the new laws, at the earliest, somebody could come and occupy the office that you've been occupying is probably the first part of August. Is that fair?
Well, it could be. I think, obviously, they're all employed elsewhere, and I'm sure they'd want to give adequate notice. But as you know, there now must be a public hearing on a proposed contract that requires an advertisement of that as well as public comment before the board takes action. And so, formerly, boards would just negotiate contracts and then hire a person. They'd call a special meeting. But it certainly won't be quite that easy with these new rules. Certainly, it's my hope that, obviously, they get someone on board, if they can, earlier, simply because we'll be rounding to the start of school, and I think it would be important for IPS to have their new superintendent in place before the school year starts on August 5th. But obviously, those timelines have to be adhered to. And, they obviously have to see where they're going to be with these finalists.
With these finalists?
The final finalists, all three of them.
This is like, I told my listeners, I felt like yesterday like Ryan Seacrest announcing names.
I understand, but they're obviously three accomplished people. And even though they don't have superintendent experience, they're from large districts, so they understand what it is to be in large cities and large districts. And so I think everyone should be very hopeful that, we're going to see a good a new school leader in place for this school year.
And they all need to come out tomorrow night from 6 to 8 at the John Morton Finney Educational Center, 120 East Walnut. Hear from them, meet them, give them the right hand of fellowship, pray for them. Pray for the board to make a decision that is in the best interest of everyone and move forward.
Yes, sir. I agree.
Dr. Peggy Hinckley, the interim superintendent of the Indianapolis Public Schools, thanks very much for being with us. Glad to have you.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
All right.